Morning, everyone. Dawanuna, Dawanunawal. In Ngunnawal language, this is Ngunnawal country, and I acknowledge the traditional custodians. And I thank CEDA for the opportunity to speak to you this morning. Now, whether I will go for 25 minutes will test my election year philosophy that less is more from a politician, so I will endeavour to be productive in this regard and leave more time for questions at the end of my remarks. But last year, when I had the opportunity to speak at this forum, I cautioned about the uncertainties of the economic outlook at that time. Ongoing tensions in the international trade arena, risks associated with a deflating house market, structural shifts in key sectors like financial services, energy, and retail. Now, 1 year on, some of these uncertainties remain. New ones have, of course, emerged, and Australia is now facing an even more challenging economic environment than when I stood in this spot 12 months ago. The impact of natural disasters on our country, and particularly on this region, has been all too apparent over this most miserable of summers. In the ACT, we have seen unprecedented devastation. We've had the world's worst air quality for several days. We've had a devastating hailstorm causing nearly $1 billion of damage to property. We've had the largest bushfire we've experienced in territory history, with 80% of the Namadgi National Park burned and fully one third of the total landmass of the Australian Capital Territory caught by that destructive fire. And it's been an extraordinary summer. Add to that the coronavirus and the impacts and the well-documented impacts that that is having already on our city's two largest export industries, higher education and tourism, and the risk that the travel ban will remain in place for some time now. We are in the most challenging economic circumstances that we have faced, I believe, since the global financial crisis of more than a decade ago. To put some facts on the table, around three quarters of the ANU's international student intake are still in China. The economic implications of that, around 4,000 students in a city of 425,000 people, is very clear, not only in the lost income for the university sector, but of course all of that consumption and expenditure in our economy. I know that our universities, ANU, University of Canberra, UNSW Canberra, are working very hard to minimise the disruption, but clearly the longer this travel ban is in place, the more significant the economic impacts are going to be. For our region particularly, as on a per capita basis, we are Australia's greatest service exporters, and in the higher education sector in particular, on a per capita basis, there is a country mile between Canberra's education service exports and that of any other state or territory. So this is very significant for the ACT at this time. Now, I think it is still too early to fully quantify the impacts of these cumulative economic shocks, but we will continue, of course, to actively monitor the situation and adjust our policy settings and lobby for the Commonwealth to do the same as more information becomes available. We are, though, resilient, and I think we are in a position to be able to respond to the challenges that lie ahead. Now, for all of Australia's states and territories, in a budgetary sense, that manifests itself most particularly in our single largest revenue source, the goods and services tax, growing more slowly than had been anticipated for a variety of reasons. Overall consumption in the economy is not as strong as what was anticipated, consumer confidence is lower, but we are also seeing an ongoing trend where the types of goods and services that are being purchased are increasingly falling outside of that is captured by the goods and services tax. The Territory is also facing a new level of uncertainty as the Commonwealth Grants Commission undertakes its regular process and will finalise its 2020 methodology review of the GST sharing relativities. That is probably the blandest title for what we can describe as how the GST pool is carved up between the states and territories. So from the ACT's perspective, we are facing a double whammy of both a smaller overall pool and the significant potential for our share of that pool to be reduced. Time will tell on exactly what that level of reduction will be, but we will know in time for our budget in the middle of the year. These challenges and downside risks are just some of the challenges that all state and territory governments are facing as we go into our budget seasons. But of course, I'm a glass half full guy, so I want to focus on the positives. We have the capacity across our jurisdiction and across the states and territories, and with some timely and appropriate assistance from the Commonwealth, to continue a strong program of public investment to build the infrastructure that our growing cities need, to address some of the particular productivity challenges that we've just been hearing about. There are opportunities ahead. The Territory remains one of the strongest economic performers in Australia. Our growth rate in the 18-19 fiscal year at 3% was significantly above the national growth rate and has been for some time now. As we look across our performance over the last part of the last decade, we've grown faster than the rest of Australia. The ACT economy is now significantly larger than that of the state of Tasmania, so I remind the Tasmanian Premier of that quite regularly. We have now rocketed into sixth place as the and growing faster. South Australia, watch out. ACT economy now generates $42 billion in economic output. Deloitte Access Economics said we have now the largest share of the national economy than we have ever been in our history. And our expectation is that the fundamentals that are underpinning that growth and that economic story will continue. But I think now is the time for a bit of a push along from the Territory Government and we hope also from the Commonwealth. We've seen incredibly strong employment growth, the fastest in the nation. We have the lowest unemployment rate in Australia. At the moment, we have the economically challenging situation, frankly, that we have more job vacancies than we have unemployed people in this city. So I'm confident that we will continue to attract people to Canberra and that our rate of population growth will continue at or above the national average. And we will attract skilled and talented people into our city because there are good, well-paying jobs in Canberra. We have the best lifestyle in this nation. We are the healthiest, happiest and longest living Australians. We're the wealthiest Australians. And I think arguably we are the most productive part of the Australian economy, given our level of education and training, which on all metrics is double that of the Australian average. As we look to where our economy will grow over the coming years, I've been encouraged by the fact that 18 of the 19 industry sectors in the ACT grew in the last 12 months. The only one that didn't is our mining industry. I think you will understand that that is not a significant part of the Territory economy, but we're firing on all other cylinders, and that has been, I think, the really encouraging part of our economic story, is that that growth has been diverse. 60% of all of the new jobs created have been outside of the public sector. And of the 235,000 jobs in this city now, 55,000 or thereabouts are in the Commonwealth Public Service, so now only about a quarter, a little less than a quarter of all employment. The Territory Government employs a little over 20,000 people across all of our local and state government responsibilities. So it has been private sector job creation that has led this very significant nation-leading jobs growth. Our population will continue to grow at or above the Australian average, and this is because people are attracted to living in this city. So to the extent that there is a war for talent amongst the Australian cities, we're doing okay on that front, and I think we will continue to do so because the fundamentals of this economy are very strong. Key to that talent attraction and retention, though, of course, is the Territory Government continuing to prioritise health, education, transport and community service delivery to ensure that this community benefits from the highest quality government services delivered in the most efficient way that a small jurisdiction can. So we will always suffer from some diseconomies of scale, but one of our great advantages is that we are both local and state government combined, and that leads to a much more efficient delivery of many aspects of government services because they're not tied up in different policy stances between state and local government that you see writ large across other states and territories. We know the value of good infrastructure, an investment, an early investment in infrastructure to support our economy. Improving quality of life, strengthening particular service delivery, supporting adaptation to a changing climate, and creating a more inclusive society. We've seen across the nation the failures when appropriate infrastructure investments are not made in time, and we have a clear long-term infrastructure plan and pipeline for this city, a clear fiscal strategy, and we take climate change seriously. It's been a priority for the Territory Government to be a national and international leader. Now, to a certain extent, that is exactly what you would expect from a jurisdiction like the ACT. Prior to achieving our 100% renewable energy, renewable electricity supply, we imported all of our power from coal-fired power stations interstate. So this transition to a renewable energy structure for the ACT has in fact created jobs and supported new industries in our city. And so we are now a national leader in research and development of renewable energy technologies that can now be exported at scale to other countries who are also making this transition. So to the extent that the politics of climate change and of that energy transition have been somewhat easier in this city, I think it is critically important that we have shown that national leadership. We became the first major city outside of Europe to transition to 100% renewable electricity, and we are underway in our ambition to achieve zero net emissions by 2045. I do note the national debate on this question. I think now every state and territory has a zero net emissions goal by at least 2050. So to a certain extent, as has been the case to date, almost all of Australia's effort and heavy lifting has been achieved by state and territory administrations. And so whilst you would always want the Australian government to do more, I guess my message of reassurance in terms of responding to climate change is the states and territories have got this covered. Because we're the doing level of government. Federal government churns a lot of money through the economy, but it doesn't actually do much. A lot of the activity occurs at state and territory level. You see that in infrastructure, and you're seeing that in the response to climate change. So again, I think there is an opportunity for Canberra to show that leadership, and that comes back to how we market and promote our city as a destination for talented people and for new investment. Our budget review that I released yesterday includes a number of additional initiatives to combat climate change and to protect our environment. We will be the leading Australian city in the transition to electric vehicles. We'll do that in our own public transport fleet, in our own government fleet, And Canberrans, on a per capita basis, have more cars and turn over their cars more frequently than any other Australians. So I am certain that that transition will be led by Canberrans. We will be there to support that. As we roll out further stages of our city's public transport network, again, that will be powered from renewable sources, further stages of light rail and the transition of our city's bus fleet. We recognise the importance of continued investment in health infrastructure as a core priority for state and territory governments, and we are currently undertaking the largest ever investment in health infrastructure in our city's history, both in terms of acute care provision at Canberra Hospital and expansion of facilities at Calvary Public on the north side, as well as community level health provision through our network of nurse-led walk-in centres. We recognise the importance of investment in education and training at early childhood level through primary, secondary and tertiary education. And we have made a series of announcements and financial commitments to support both new infrastructure and renewal of infrastructure and expansion of the education and training offerings in this city. A new UNSW Canberra campus emerging on the eastern side of the CBD, active support for the University of Canberra and the Australian National University through strategic partnerships and effectively the creation of special economic zones for those universities to facilitate new private sector investment as well as strategic public sector investment and the University of Canberra Public Hospital. A partnership between the ACT government and the University of Canberra is a very good practical example. We committed to it in the 2016 election. It is now open and functioning, supporting education and training at the university, as well as providing a world-class new public health facility for Canberra. So we move beyond a discussion of economic metrics. A particular focus for the government this year is the introduction of our wellbeing framework. So on Canberra Day next month, I will launch the ACT's wellbeing framework. It's a concept that has attracted a lot of attention worldwide in recent years, and the New Zealand government has led this work at a national level, but we will be the first Australian state or territory and the first government in Australia to embed wellbeing indicators. It's an opportunity to talk more broadly about factors that are important to our overall quality of life, health, education, connections to others in the community, what it means to be a resident of this city, safety, security, and as we've been starkly reminded over the last few months, the environment in which we live. Now, this discussion includes the business sector and the important role that business plays in our growth, in providing meaningful and valued jobs for our residents and the wider role that business can play in supporting our community. Fundamental to a strong quality of life is a strong economy, but we also know that some in our community do not experience their fair share of our prosperity, and that the wellbeing framework is envisaged as a means of understanding where and how we can improve the overall wellbeing of the community, particularly those who are currently missing out. Now, before I conclude this morning, it would be remiss of me not to touch on one of my great passions as the Territory Treasurer over the last decade, and that is tax reform. Now, in October last year, our friends and colleagues in New South Wales released a discussion paper on a review of federal financial relations. And there was a particular line in that discussion paper that was of interest to me. And it was, and I quote, "State governments need to modernise their tax system in light of the changing environment." Could not agree more. So that's why we have been in the business of modernising our tax system for the last 8 years. And I think we have achieved a lot in that time. Our objective was to deliver a tax system that was simpler, fairer and more efficient and more sustainable in the long term. We wanted to shift the tax mix away from narrowly based transaction taxes towards a broad based land tax that we already levy as the municipal government through general rates. This has provided much greater certainty in the Territory's budget position and allows us to plan for the long term the essential services that our community will need. A very practical implication of this is that we have reduced a significant barrier to entry of one of the most important markets in our economy, the housing sector. So stamp duty on an average property in the ACT has fallen by 40% since the reforms began. And our stamp duty charges are now the second lowest in Australia and soon will be the lowest. We have introduced a first home buyer concession. They pay no stamp duty now. We've moved away from paying grants and we've thrown all of that resource into abolishing stamp duty for first home buyers. And whilst that has had a short-term impact on the Territory's revenues, we have seen first home buyer share of new housing finance and purchases in the ACT stepping up to over 20%. So one in five home buyers in the Territory at the moment is a first home buyer. And this, I think, is important in terms of intergenerational equity, but it also demonstrates our capacity to attract and retain young people into a housing market that is at times very tight and one that needs to further diversify to offer a wider variety of product to meet the different needs of the next generation of Canberrans. And through our tax reform agenda, we are able to achieve those outcomes. On the commercial side, for small and medium businesses, there is now no longer stamp duty, commercial stamp duty on any purchase up to 1.5 million. So that has eliminated about 70% of all commercial property transactions from the stamp duty net. Our payroll tax threshold at $2 million is the highest in the nation and is set in that way to encourage small and medium businesses to establish and expand in the Territory. 90% of businesses operating in the ACT pay no payroll tax. And that has, I think, been one of the contributing factors towards employment growth in that area of our economy. We also abolished insurance tax. Hands up in the room, who knew that? Good that the Treasury team do. I'm pleased about that. But in light of the number of people who had to look at the fine detail of their insurance policies after the hailstorm last month, a number of people were surprised to see that there was no Territory Government duty on insurance products. This, again, has been an important part of our tax reform agenda. It was a bad tax, made insurance premiums more expensive than they needed to be, and the abolition of that tax has in fact encouraged more people to take out insurance, which I think the value of which people are beginning to appreciate as we have more extreme natural disasters and weather events occurring in this city. Now, there are some downside risks to our economy, as I've highlighted, and we know cost of living pressures are very pertinent for just households here in Canberra, but across the nation. So as we frame the next stages of our tax reform, we remain focused on our ultimate objective, which is a complete transition away from those transaction taxes to broad-based land taxes. But we have the capacity to absorb through economic shocks and changes in circumstances the rate and pace of that change. And so we'll be very cognizant of that as we frame this year's budget. So in conclusion, there are risks on the horizon. There are challenges for state and territory governments. We are all going to experience budgetary pressure over the coming 12 months. I think it's fair to say that even the government that has the greatest surplus fetish in this nation is now starting to look beyond that. We all recognise the need now to turn our efforts to recovery, but our focus is on making good, strategic, long-term investments in infrastructure and in service delivery that will not only support the economy in the short term, but improve our productivity in the long term. We want to maintain Canberra's reputation as the most livable city in the world, and we want to be in a position to win that battle to attract talented and skilled people to our city. And I think we are in a good place to do so. And thank you very much for the opportunity to talk this morning.